Accession number 13269, Reel 1.
Mr. Rose, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In Hull, in this house.
In which year?
1925.
What did your father do for a living?
He was in the way office at Reckitt and Sons.
Did you go to school in Hull?
Yes. At Mersey Street School.
How old were you when you left?
14.
So you left in 39?
Yeah.
Before the war started?
Just.
Were you in the bombing of Hull?
Yes.
Where were you living during the bombing?
In this house.
In Laburnum Avenue?
In Laburnum Avenue.
What do you remember about the Blitz in Hull? Can you remember any particular streets and buildings that were hit?
Yes, well, the biggest memories, I think, were going to the evening classes in the town. We used to go to the night school at Park Street School, because I was starting to serve apprenticeship as a joiner. And many nights we'd just get started with the school and the sirens would blow and that would be the end. They'd close it down and, of course, then we had to walk home. There was no buses, you know, not running then. And many nights, all young people, young fellas, of course, we actually thought it was a bit of an adventure, I think, to walk on through it. And this town or this city was really bombed almost night in and night out for years and didn't get the publicity, shall I say, that your Coventries and your Londons got. They say this was the most heavily bombed city in the country, and on the radio they used to put it down as a northeast port, and of course it was bombed time and time again. The nights of May the 6th and 7th 1940 was when they really blitzed all the centre of the city.
I think it would have been 1941, actually.
41. And I'll never forget trying to get through to the other end of Hull to go to work. And you couldn't ride your cycle through the centre of the town for hosepipes. And we used to go right through the middle of Hull to Anlaby Road. And, of course, the whole middle of the town was on fire, as well as the residential area, of course, around here. I could show you now this where the sticks of bombs had dropped on this village, where you can see the five or six houses cut out in the line.
When you say this village, what do you mean by that?
Well, this is known as the Garden Village, where I live, which was built by Reckitt and Sons for their employees. And it took quite a battering. This house didn't get bombed, but further down Lilac Avenue across the road there was quite a lot down there, but it really did get a hammering, did Hull. I remember coming home from work one night and there's some planes came over shooting the barrage balloons down, and then they hit Salt End, which is the BP depot down Heddon Road. The whole of Reckitt and Coleman's was in flames, including the gasworks next to it. It really took a pasting.
Do you think the Germans were aiming at military or industrial targets, or just bombing at random?
Well, possibly aiming for the docks, but most of it bombing at random. I mean, when the centre of the city went up on the the 7th and 8th, well, that was just random. Random bombing, you know. The whole of the place was on fire, and of course it was still on fire when they came back the following night. Fire engines here from Halifax, Bradford, and all over the place.
How did you know they had come from so far?
Well, it was on the side of the fire engines, you know. You could see they'd brought them in from all over Yorkshire to try and stop the place from burning down completely. The docks, of course, took hell of a hammering. So it really did get a pasting, did Hull.
Were there any parts of Hull that more or less escaped?
No, I should say it was spread all over the place, you know. The densely populated areas, as usual, they seemed to catch it a lot more than, like, Handleby Road, Bean Street, where we used to do a lot of repairs, and as fast as we were repairing the houses, they were knocking them about again, you know. It was where an awful lot of people got killed in the communal shelters down the centre of the terraces, like Bean Street, Regent Street, streets like that, Spivey Street in Stone Ferry, what we call Stone Ferry, which was a big industrial area. It still is, with oil mills, cocoa mills. And there's an awful lot of people got killed around there. So by the time I went and volunteered to go in the army in 43, in a way I was sort of glad to get away from it. And this, it went on for many, many years, it all. Some nights, small raids, and other nights, the big ones. But as I say, what did upset a lot, most of the people in Hull, and they still talk about it, was the name not mentioned. Whereas Coventry, which was bad, but it has a big cathedral, and it got a one-off hammering. But this city got it night after night, year after year. Sometimes be it only one, two, three. Other times a couple of hundred, you know, a bit. Yeah. So the people of Hull are still very peeved about that.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing in Hull?
Oh, pretty good. Very good, I should say. Unless, I suppose, personally, if you'd lost someone. But the majority, we used to go back to work next day, and the morale was quite good. Quite good.
But did people get demoralised by the bombing?
Well, yeah, you used to get fed up of it, mainly because you couldn't get a good night's sleep, I think.
Did it make people want to come to terms with Hitler?
Oh, no, I always think I don't agree with getting mixed up in wars that have nothing directly to do with us, but in that instance he was coming here, and I don't think we had any choice but to, he had to be stopped. No, I don't think the people were I never heard anyone say it's time we packed in, we've had enough of this.
Did you use the public shelters yourself?
Sometimes. Yes, coming home, especially with a group of young fellas, we used to pop into the shelters, and the first thing they did was get the cards out. We'd be sat there playing cards, you know. Same as in the local cinemas. More than once I've been in the Astoria Cinema, which is still on Alderness Road, it's now a bingo hall, and it would flash up on the screen that the sirens had sounded, and the show would carry on, but anyone who wished to leave would leave now. And not being brave, we couldn't be bothered, I don't think, especially when we were with a young lady. We used to stay in, and more than one night I've seen the plaster in the ceilings when the whole place was shaking come down through the ray of the, you know, when the film's on, and you can see the plaster falling down, the dust from the plaster. And of course then when you came out, it was generally all hell let loose. So it was quite hectic times.
What were the shelters like inside? Completely bare?
Yeah, bare brickwork, and Some had the communal ones had seats down the side, some of them. Otherwise, the bare brickwork. And at home, we had an Anderson shelter, which I actually preferred to be out with the lads when these things were happening than being sat at home with my mother and close family. I think when you're with a group of men similar to when you're in the army, you don't have time to get worried or scared. But when you sat with your own mother, I think I preferred to be in the big shelters with the lads, and as I say, the cards used to come out, and you tend to think of the good times, but it wasn't too bad, so long as you didn't get it yourself. I mean, this was it. And most people had the attitude, well, if my name's on it, that'll be the end of it. So nobody was really brave, but not once did I ever hear anyone say, it's time we pack this up. Because we knew if he'd got here, things would have been 10 times worse. If those people had got here, I wouldn't be sat here talking to you now.
Was there any hatred of the pilots who were doing the bombing?
Yeah, I do think at the time, if you'd have got your hands on them, possibly a few hours later, like happens even today, I think if you'd got your hands on them at the time it was going on, they wouldn't have been taken prisoner. And I still think the same thing happens now. But when the actual fear has sort of passed, well, after all, they're only men the same as yourself. And be treat accordingly. But I would say this, yeah. If you'd have got your hands on them at the time, they would have killed them. And the same thing happens, as repeated, the same thing happens today. It's all very well saying we must all be good boys and that, but when you've seen a friend killed alongside of you, in that few minutes, if you got your hands on them, you would kill them. But then, I would never agree with knocking anybody about or doing anything wrong to them once they've been taken prisoner.
What did you think of the work of the emergency services during the Blitz in Hull?
Well, very good. You know, they couldn't have done much more than what they did do. When you saw them working, especially the following morning, I mean, men and women who'd been out there all night and were still at it, trying to rescue people, it was very good.
Did you ever get the situation where the fire brigade was still working on fires the night afterwards, so that the German Air Force could see the fires still burning?
Yeah, that was the big thing in May. Hull was still well ablaze when they came back the following night. All your centre, your Hammonds, King Edward Street, Ranks Flour Mill, Reckitt and Coleman, the whole lot was still blazing. There was no way they could get it out, which was a good torch for them when they came back the following evening. But those were the two main raids in Hull, May the 7th and 8th. But all the others were smaller, but still highly dangerous.
Did people leave the city at any stage to get away from it?
Yeah, quite a few people used to get out at night and go out into the country. And of course, they tell me from Market Wheaton Hill, which is 25 mile away approximately, you could see the whole of the city ablaze from there. Like, Yeah, quite a few people used to go out and spend the nights in the fields, when, especially when the weather was not too bad.
Now, how did you come to join the army yourself?
I volunteered to go in the army in 1943. Most of my friends had gone in, close friends had gone in different services, Navy, RAF, and I was an only child, and my father died when I was 2 years old, so my mother brought me up, and I thought, well, I'd prefer to go in the Royal Engineers if possible, being in the building trade, so I went and volunteered. And nearly got killed by my mother when I came home. Because actually, I suppose I could have got away with being in a reserved occupation, being on bomb damage work and all that.
When you were on that bomb damage work, just going back to that, were you employed by the authorities or
no,
privately?
No, I was employed by J. Taylor and Son. Joiners on Anleby Road, a very old established joinery firm, who did a lot of the, not because I was there as a youngster, a lot of the top class joinery work in Hull, but of course when the war started they were whipped onto army camps and bomb damage, emergency repairs, so we were boarding up and fastening houses up as quick as possible. They employed 30 or 40 men, and as I say, it could have been class, well, it was classes, a reserved occupation, but I could have got away with staying with them. But
what exactly would you do to a house in terms of bomb damage as a joiner?
Boarding up windows, hanging doors back on quick, and trying to get them habitable. Those that were, it was able to do that to them, I mean, some were just beyond all hope, but to getting them up to accommodation so people could get back in them, and then lo and behold, two or three nights after, you'd be back at the same place, so they'd all got blown out again.
Did you ever get looting of bombed houses?
No, I never saw any instance of anybody looting. No, I didn't. A standing joke of a friend of mine who has died now, he had his own small business, cigarettes, tobacco and what have you, sweets, and of course during the war cigarettes were pretty difficult to come by unless you, each shop had its own sort of under the counter friends who used to get the cigarettes. And this friend of mine, he was near one of the factories here in Hull, and he had a notice up, no cigarettes, and he used to let them go to his regulars, which was the done thing, I suppose. He got a direct hit one night, and the factory next door next morning, everybody was filling the pockets with more cigarettes than you've ever seen. It blew the flaming lot over the wall. And it was a standing joke, he'd had this notice up, no cigarettes in, like, but he lost all the lot that he had.
Which street was that in?
Oh, that was near Ricketts, that was in Cleveland Street in Hull. And they often used to pull his leg, even people in this last two or three years about, I remember when you had no cigarettes to sell, they're all over the factory wall next morning.
Now, can we go back to you joining the army and tell me what happened once you joined up?
Well, I joined up, I went down to Preston in Lancashire, to the barracks there, and then on to Formby near Liverpool for 6 weeks infantry training with the Lancashire Fusiliers, assault courses and the usual 6 weeks infantry training, and then from there I was posted to the Royal Engineers down at Aldershot, and I did approximately 2 months down at Aldershot on driving instruction, and became a driver. I passed out in 1943, passed my driving test in Reading, and after Aldershot we then got posted to units, and I got posted to 114 Road Construction Company, 114 Road Construction Company, Royal Engineers, and they were up at Appleby in Westmorland. They were actually, there's a big tank gunnery range up there, I believe it's still there, and they were building lane roads for the on the gunnery range. It wasn't a bad mob, not shall we say a happy company, but anyway, they'd been chased out of Dunkirk. They were, majority of them were a lot older than myself. Well, a lot older. I mean, when you're 18, anybody that's 28 seems old, I suppose, when you... But they were an older set of men, and there was about half a dozen of us youngsters got posted to them. And bit of a dreary sort of outfit up at Appleby. And I got the idea, along with one or two more friends, to put in for a posting to get to a better, shall we say, outfit. I put in for a posting, and it came through, and I left 114 still at Appleby, and I was told by a lot of the older hands that I was barmy for leaving them. They'd been thrown out of Dunkirk, and they were on a soft touch, they wouldn't go abroad anymore. Well, you get all these rumours in the army or in all the services, and they were on to me about, you'll finish up, you'll be in Europe and all this, that and the other, you should have stayed with us, which I didn't. I left there, and went down south near Bovington Camp in Poole, near Poole in Dorset, and from there I was shipped over to France. And from
With which unit were you then?
Well, I was a reinforcement then when I went over, so you're a nobody actually. You're in army terms the odds and sods department, and I was then posted to the 71st Field Company.
This was after D-Day.
Oh yeah, they landed on D-Day, and I joined them approximately D-20, I believe, as reinforcements, as I say.
What was your crossing of the Channel like?
Pretty grim. I'd never been on a ship in my life, apart from going across the Humber here on the ferry, and we were matched onto these, I believe, if I remember right, infantry landing craft. They were quite a large landing craft. I always remember we went on near New Haven, and the red caps, there's three or four red caps stood at the end of the jetty. I believe they were there to make sure you didn't change your mind about wanting to go. That was a standing joke. And as I say, only been a young fella and never been on a ship in his life, went down below on these things, and with the bunks very closely stacked together, and they shut the lid down, and that was it. There's three or four sailors to each one, and away we went. And when I think back, one of those gets hit, of course, you've had it. You just go down like a tin of sardines. It was a pretty messy deal in there. I mean, everybody was throwing up. Eventually we got there and was more glad to get off the damn thing than be on it. Very quiet, of course, when we got there. I mean, and then I got posted up to 71st Field Company, and the first person I met was a friend who lives, still lives 15 doors from me down Laburnum Avenue, and he was the first person that I met in France, Mr. Eric Daniels, who was a driver with 71st Field Company. He'd been with them from about 39-40.
Where were the units when you joined them?
Approximately.
I think you found the name of the place. I think you said it was near Benneville.
Near Benneville.
What were they doing there when you reached them?
Oh, when I joined them, they were dug in an orchard with all the trucks and what have you, and actually doing nothing at the time. Things were pretty quiet around there. Their main job was a bridging company, a Bailey Bridging Company, and it was pretty quiet all along until we moved out. We bridged, there's a couple of canals, early doors, but the main bridging jobs really started further on into Belgium. They just used to keep moving along. Naturally, the infantry get the main stick, and our field company is whistled up to go with, we were Second Army, but often attached to 30 Corps, 15 Scottish Guards Armoured. The different, you go out to different attachments, you know, where the unit is sent for bridging. And as I say, things were pretty steady until we got into Belgium, and then we bridged near Berg Leopold, and then on, when the breakthrough came, of course, we went through Brussels. We only had about a day in Brussels because they were going wild there. I think we had a very hectic time, a good time.
In what way? What exactly did you do in Brussels?
Well, the people were rejoicing that much, you know, you couldn't go wrong. Like, there was as much booze as you wanted. But we moved out the following day, so we didn't have some of the lucky guys, like, got a, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in Brussels, and they really had a hectic time.
And did they even desert?
Not to my knowledge, no. I've never. Most probably they would have liked to, with the girls that they were fixing up with, you know. You couldn't go wrong, really. And all being, the majority being single young men, like, we were. It was a pretty wild time. And then